Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of April the 7th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, I'll have a rundown of what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week, as well an interview with Riley Willinen, the encampment lead with the city. Council heard about a new proposed location for the temporary village, and we'll hear all about it, along with a decision that was made on Monday night. But first, Council started off its evening with a presentation from the Recreation and Culture Division. Lori Abthorpe, the Supervisor of Cultural Development, and Karen Cadall, the Special Events Developer, told Council about all of the events coming up in 2025. The first event of the season will be the Quest Tech and Gaming event. It takes place on May the 9th and 10th at the Fort William Gardens. Other events include the Kite Festival, Canada Day at the Waterfront, the Teddy Bears Picnic, and Live at the Waterfront. A few announcements on Monday night. Councillor Brian Hamilton will host a McKellar Ward meeting on April the 16th. It'll take place at the Slovak Legion. It starts at 7 p.m. As well, Councillor Dominic Pastolino will have a Northwood Ward meeting on April the 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Kinsman Centre on James Street. As well, the city will host a town hall in May. It will allow the public to come and meet city administration, then ask them questions. The event is open house style. It'll take place on Tuesday, May the 13th. It runs from 6:30 until 8 p.m., and it will take place at the West Thunder Community Center. One report coming out of closed session on Monday night, it gives administration the authority to execute a funding agreement for the temporary village. The value of the agreement is $2.8 million, and Council approved the agreement. Administration brought back a report to Council this week regarding the James Whalen tugboat. At the March 24th meeting, the original report, which recommends recycling the tug, was referred to administration, noting there is a potential opportunity to have a local company scrap the tug for free. In a memo to Council, administration contacted Harbor Metals and determined that there was no actual proposal or viable option put forward by them, and that they had been identified without their knowledge or involvement. Therefore, no opportunity exists to have the James Whalen tug recycled at no cost to the city. Now, before a decision was made this week, there was an amendment proposed to move forward with a provisional item number one, and that was to keep a few select items of the boat at a cost of about $20,000. That amendment was defeated. A second amendment was proposed for provisional item number three, which would save a large portion of the boat. The cost was $420,000, and that would be paid for by deferring other items from the budget. The amendment was also lost. Administration recommended again to recycle the complete tugboat at a cost of just a little under $600,000. Now, Council also heard a deputation from two members on Monday from the Transportation Museum of Thunder Bay and how the museum would like to obtain some of the tugboat. The museum spoke about its long-term vision for its site at Pool 6, how to coordinate work so that the museum could obtain some of the tugboat, and working to reduce the cost to the city for recycling and preservation of the tug. The museum wants to take as many artifacts as it could, while also allowing the museum to potentially reimburse the city for costs if it obtains other funding. Now, initially, the museum's board said it will keep discussions open with the city to preserve as much of the vessel as possible. However, they would not commit to funding or accepting ownership without a long-term land use license or a lease at its waterfront site. Administration says with that information in mind, it recommends the full recycling of the tugboat. Now, in the end, Council voted to recycle the entire vessel. It was noted that negotiating a lease for the Transportation Museum is a months-long process and was presented to Council in closed session last month. In September of last year, a recommendation was approved to look at recycling the boat, but to keep the boat's bridge and stack for a future display. Administration says when it asked for tender prices, they were received based on recycling the entire vessel, and then there were prices for provisional work to keep up specific components, including the entire top deck or the entire vessel deck from the waterline up. City Council had an hours-long discussion this week about the proposed temporary village. administration recommending having a site on Fort William Road between the Nebin River and the Nebin McIntyre floodway to serve as the location for the temporary village. The land is owned by the Lakehead Region Conservation Authority. In October of last year, Council approved the 10-part enhanced encampment response, which called for the creation of a temporary village. A recommendation in November of last year was to build the village on East Mile Street, which was not approved by Council. Administration then had to find an alternative site for the village. More than 30 properties were examined and stored, with sites on Enniskillen Avenue, Tupper Street in the North Tor, Cumberland Street by the Salvation Army, Waterloo Street at Walsh Street, and multiple sites along Empire Avenue scoring the highest, although they are not recommended. Administration says a high ranking did not necessarily mean a suitable site, as professional expertise and judgment was also needed to evaluate the results, such as sites in residential areas or those close to schools. Council approved one amendment to the recommendation from administration, which meant that a site on Cumberland Street was selected, which is near the Salvation Army's Journey to Life Center. The proposed village will be located there once the site is cleared and services are installed. A memo will come back at the April 14th meeting to give Council a ranked resolution and a backup location if necessary. It's because there were concerns over the ability for the village to be located at both the Fort William Road site as well as the Cumberland site. The idea is to have a backup site without having to go through the entire committee of the whole process again. The site decision will need to be ratified at City Council, and that will take place on April the 14th. Now, a public survey was done earlier this year, with nearly half of the responses suggesting sites in either the downtown South Tor or the Simpson Street area would be appropriate. A call from the city to ask for the use of private land and lease that land also achieved minimal results. It was also noted that there is some divided opinion on the village, with supporters seeing the village as necessary, with opponents highlighting public health and safety issues. There were also concerns over how the village may not be temporary, safety and security, access, and residency issues. When it comes to funding the temporary shelter, the city has been approved for about $2.8 million in funding for the project, which is just over half of the estimated cost. Construction will need to start by this summer to keep that funding, with 80 units in use by the end of the year. We'll hear more about this project when encampment lead Riley Willinen joins me here in the Minute studio. Council approved a funding agreement on Monday night for the Housing Enabling Core Servicing with the Ministry of Infrastructure. The province will pay up to half of the cost of the construction project, just over $8.6 million. The funding will build on the Housing Enabling Water System Fund, which will pay for water and sewer servicing in the Central Avenue area between Balmoral and Gulf Links Road. The core servicing funding will help improve and expand roads in the area. This core funding will also pay for street and trail lighting, sidewalks and multi-use trails, drainage, boulevards, tree planting, and replacing the Central Avenue Bridge over the McIntyre River. About 2.3 kilometers of new roads will be built as well. The target is to have more than 1,200 housing units built in this area, with a project completion date of March of 2028. Based on the amount of work, a temporary engineering position will also be created to support this development. Council debated and discussed a recommendation from the Council Composition Review Committee for a few hours on Monday night, which noted that Council should be changed to have 11 total members and a redrawing of ward boundaries. The committee recommended having a mayor, two at-large councillors, and eight ward councillors, with four wards having two councillors each. Council ultimately rejected that recommendation, opting to stay with the status quo composition of council instead. There were also some amendments to the committee's recommendation on Monday night. The first amendment was to take the recommendation but only have one councillor per ward and then six at-large councillors. That would have had 11 council members in total. That amendment was defeated. Another amendment was put on the floor to send the report back to administration and redraw ward boundaries of the existing seven wards following the 2026 election, and this would be to achieve population equity. That amendment also failed. There was also an additional vote put on the floor to dissolve the committee, which was approved. The committee was dissolved with gratitude. Now, Council first got its first report from this committee a month ago, and Council wanted some additional information. That included wanting to know why the size of Council should be reduced, a need for administrative report, and how the ward boundaries were determined. The committee noted that it was influenced by the feeling that a slightly smaller council would likely create more efficient discussion and therefore decision-making for council. This was raised by several current councillors. As well, the change in size was based on the best representative size based on the four-ward model, and the reduction was a focus of the committee based on surveys and feedback. A memo from the Office of the City Clerk notes that as far as for administrative tasks, there is a review of council committees and the one-stop customer service shop that could reduce the workload for council. The clerk's office also noted that other ward boundary reviews have reduced the number of councillors in other communities, noting that Thunder Bay is slightly higher than its comparators for the number of councillors. There is also the question about having a plebiscite or question on the ballot for these changes. The clerk's office noted that there would be a lot of work required to have this question finalized by early 2026. It has to be a yes or no question, and there also must be consultation, public meetings, notice of meetings, as well, along with an appeal process, and the cost to have that question on the ballot would be an additional $50,000 to $100,000. Council originally started discussing changes to its composition in 2020. Work started, though, in 2023 to have the recommendation ready for this year. Council wrote an update on request from June of last year to look at different options for expanding the season of outdoor rinks in Thunder Bay. Administration looked at five different options, including synthetic rink material as an alternative to traditional ice, refrigeration system to be able to create ice at higher temperatures, a covered structure to provide shade over the rink, concrete pads to be a flat base for the creation of ice, or as a year-round inline skate service alternative, as well as outdoor rink hubs to create operational efficiencies. Administration looked at each option based on cost, the estimated lifespan, and how much it would actually change the skating season. The current asset management plan and budget projections do not include upgrades like these to the rink sites. There are 31 rink sites across the city, and administration notes that over time there are fewer people using the rinks. Climate change may also make outdoor rinks unusable in the future, like communities in the south. There is no final recommendation on what could be used to expand the skating season. And the costs varied amongst the five options, with a synthetic surface costing about $150,000 per site, plus installation and site preparation. Refrigeration would cost about $1.2 to $1.5 million per site, about $1.3 million to build a shelter for a rink, about $100,000 for a concrete pad, while building new rink shacks or hubs would be about $250,000 a site. All of the items would expand the skating season, but each option has different maintenance needs and costs. As well, usage levels were also part of the report to council. The busiest rinks in town are at the West Thunder Community Center, North End Rec, Carrick Park, and the James Street Playfield. Administration notes that none of the sites that were posted, noting that they were not meeting their user targets in previous years, met their targets this year. That means administration may consider downgrading the rinks before next skating season. A recommendation would come to council before next winter. As well, the James Street Playfield, Minnesota Park, and Carrick Park usage levels have also not hit their targets in the past 5 years. Notices could be posted this winter about potential future downgrades. There was no council decision on changes to rinks, but the item was taken off of the outstanding list. And finally, council approved the Complete Streets and Traffic Calming Policies at their meeting on Monday night. The Complete Streets policy will create a design standard that includes pedestrians, cyclists, transit users, and drivers when the roads are built, although not every element is used on every road. The concept encourages more than drivers to use the roads, as with the standard being used for all new roads and road rebuilding in Thunder Bay. Some examples of complete streets are Balmoral Street, Red River Road, and Court Streets in the North Core, along with Ogoma Street. At this time, there is no cost to implement the policy, but there could be significant infrastructure changes in the future, including road redesigns and maintenance. Now, the traffic calming policy will create a consistent approach to handling requests for traffic calming, as the process at this time is complaint-driven. Traffic calming is used to reduce the speed of traffic, but also to discourage cut-through traffic. This can include physically changing some roadways or providing education. A new policy means that those impacted by the change or would need to submit a petition to the city. City Council would have to provide direction, and city staff or the Traffic Safety Committee would need to make a recommendation for a change. This would then be followed by a technical review and then a survey of people who would be impacted by any traffic calming. And that's a wrap as to what happened at Council this week. For more information on anything that happens at Council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. The temporary village has found a home. City Council approved a location on Monday night on Cumberland Street. It's right near the Journey to Life Center that's operated by the Salvation Army, and that site on Cumberland Street will be the home of the temporary village. It has been a winding path to get to this decision, with lots of public and council debate on the topic. Riley Willinen is the encampment lead with the City of Thunder Bay. Riley, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
Happy to be here, Jeff.
Okay, so let's start off with your original recommendation that went to council on Monday night. Many sites considered by the city, but we got to Fort William Road as a recommendation. How do we kind of land there?
Yeah, so there's three key factors that went into administration's recommendation. First was a review of municipally owned sites, which administration's opinion didn't result in any super strong options. We did some exploration of private lands for lease, sale, or donation. Again, didn't really result in any viable options. And we also done some public engagement, heard mixed feedback through that engagement, but some key things that went into our decision were from that public feedback. So those three things led us to identifying 1111 Fort William Road.
And then Fort William Road, obviously it scored relatively high, I guess, compared to some of the other options. Is that why it was chosen?
Overall, the property scored 8th amongst the ranked list of properties, but the ranked list wasn't the ultimate decision maker. It gave us a place to start from, but there was a lot of internal discussions with several divisions across the corporation that participated. So there was professional expertise that was involved in assessing each site. So though it might not have ranked near the top, there was additional factors and considerations such as the proximity to a school, or if something was close to residential areas, like embedded directly within an area. Those were considerations that went into choosing 1111 Fort William Road because they didn't have the same level of risk as the other.
Yeah, and it depends on the neighborhood, right? Like I noticed one property was on Enniskillen Avenue, and that's a highly residential area that probably wouldn't be an appropriate site even if it scored high.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Ultimately, though, a different site was chosen, as we've known from council, a site on Cumberland Street. Tell me a bit about that location.
Yeah, so the lot is directly adjacent to the Journey to Life Center on Salvation Army. It's on the same side of the road as the Salvation Army Center, so it's not across the road, which I think I've seen a little bit of confusion about.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so you're on the east side of the road then.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It's a fully treed lot, but it is owned by the city. So there's going to be some pretty extensive site preparation that's required. The area also has a lot of bedrock that's present. Don't know exactly how that's going to factor into site preparation costs at this point because we still need to do a little bit more exploration. But it is, you know, relatively close enough to some supportive services, well connected to public transit. It's near like a naturalized area, which we've heard from folks is important that they feel like they're connected with nature. So there's considerations certainly around the site, but it's not feasible.
Okay. So the one site is feasible though at Cumberland though.
Yes, it's not our top recommendation, but it is feasible.
So tell me about how does this change your plans then for the village?
In terms of timelines, it doesn't change too much. Because it's municipally owned, we're able to mobilize really, really quickly. So we're still on track to meet our target of starting construction by July and completing by December of 2025.
And are there reasons that that date for construction is so important?
Yeah, certainly. A few reasons. One, it's a contractual obligation.
So important.
Yeah. But also, we know that folks need support. There's a lot of people that are really struggling right now, and the village will help people to have a place to stabilize, access services, you know, change things around, make better choices, improve their lives. And associated with that is also making things better for the broader community. Unmanaged encampments do pose, you know, pretty serious public health and safety risks. So it's meant to really improve community safety and well-being for everyone.
And once this village is, the construction starts, if, you know, that's July, when do we expect to have something ready that people can move into?
Yeah, so the occupancy will take a phased approach. So though the site has capacity to fit up to 100 units, we do have to have at least 80. So it'll be somewhere in that 80 to 100 range. But that doesn't mean that everybody will occupy the village at the same time. So it's not going to be 80 people all at once. It will take a phased approach just to allow people to get used to what the village operates like, allow the service provider to get used to it, and allow for some time to make any adjustments should they be necessary before scaling up to that full capacity.
And tell me about the service provider. This is not going to be like the city running and operating this village?
Yeah, correct. So the city would not be the operator. We will be seeking a third-party operator through a request for proposals process. Some key qualifications that we'll be seeking is an organization that has demonstrated experience in supporting with people complex needs, and an ability to partner with other organizations, because we know that there's a real need for holistic supports and services, and I don't think there's any one organization in town that can do it all.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, you can't do it alone, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Some public consultation done on the encampment just overall, the village concept earlier this year. What were you hearing from the public?
Yeah, so I would say responses we've received through various avenues of public engagement have been diverse. There's some people that are very strongly in support of the project. There's some people who are very strongly in opposition to the project. Overall, though, I think there is an understanding in our community that something needs to change and something needs to be done about it. So though we might have disagreements on the approach, I think people are united in that.
Tell me about the next steps for this project. What comes next now that we have, a site at least selected at this point?
Yeah, so the site still has to, or the recommendation, sorry, still has to go for ratification on Monday, so April 14th. If everything is ratified, then we will move into some public engagement, focusing on educating folks what the village is going to look like, and also receiving feedback and mitigating concerns that folks might have. We'll also launch two separate requests for proposals processes. One will be to acquire the units in the construction, and the other one will be to acquire the third-party operator.
And as you said, we're moving fast ahead with this. It's got to be started by July, I guess.
Yeah.
Exciting?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Riley, appreciate you coming in today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
And a big thanks for listening to The Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback, check out our website, thunderbay.ca/minutes. You can also find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, plus you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. We'll chat again next week. Make it a great day.